I think I speak for everyone in sales when I say that we'd love to have a way to expedite our deals without coming across as salesy, pushy, needy, manipulative, and you know what, just for good measure, without having to resort to any of those god-awful, cliched closing tactics. In this week's episode of the Sales Playbook Podcast, we're going to go there. My name is Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems, and I'm the author of the YourSalesPlaybook.com blog and your host for the Sales Playbook Podcast. I've personally trained over 40,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners who want to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. Okay, this week's episode of the Sales Playbook Podcast is brought to you by our virtual sales camp. We're going to be talking all about it at the end of the podcast, but if you'd like to check it out now, feel free to visit yoursalesplaybook.com/salescamp. So there's a lot of things right now that are going on. And the other day when I did my podcast, I believe I referred to it as kind of the perfect storm when you look at it in the context of things that can delay a deal. I mean, so let's start from the perspective of knowing that under normal circumstances, deals sometimes can take a bit longer, right? I mean, it happens. But now we have this thing called the pandemic going on. And right away, I mean, I bet you there's a lot of people who heard me say that here in the U.S. All right, Castain, get your information up to date. I don't know what part of the remote wilderness part of New York, up in some cabin or living in a cave that you're in. But things are starting to open up now with the pandemic. And my response is simple. That's going to make them temporarily even more distracted. Because we go from one mode of thinking and one mode of operating that everybody kind of had to go into going into the pandemic, especially with moving their workforces, sales forces, operations team, you name it, into a remote model. There was a lot that goes into that. But I'm here to tell you, now that things are opening up, there's a lot that goes into bringing them back. Or even if they don't have to bring them back, and it's just a real simple thing for them. Now, they're thinking differently about their customers because they can begin to visit them again. Maybe they can get back to doing some of the corporate events that they were doing. You guys get the deal. So you have that going on. Here in the U.S., I mean, in this part of the world, we're going to be heading into summer. And what happens in some industries, not all, I mean, everyone's different, but you have a lot of prospects out there who delay because of the summer, and some of them it's because of a mental checkout. Others it's because it's just a pain in the ass to try to coordinate schedules around vacation schedules, and that's just on their team. Now they got to coordinate all of that with the people on your team involved in the deal. So you've got a lot of things going on that can delay the deal. So the question now becomes, and I actually think it's a question that you guys should ask kind of yourself, and then I want you to bring it to your sales team and brainstorm. Just kind of brainstorm this question. In what ways can I expedite my deals without coming across as salesy, pushy, needy, manipulative, and without using any of those cliched closing tactics that really should have been put out to pasture in the 1970s. So what I've done is I've prepared about 6 suggestions for you to help you along. But this episode comes with a disclaimer. This topic that we're talking about, how to expedite our deals, is one of those topics that there's so much we really should be talking about that we would really need a 7-hour podcast. Or, you know, in my case, I've built entire courses around expediting deals because there's just a lot of components to it. So when I share these 6 with you, I want us to all agree that there's going to be plenty more that's missing here. So, I mean, I feel kind of bad that you might have the experience listening to this podcast and thinking, oh, man, he should have talked about questioning tactics. Or he should, yeah, I should have talked about a lot of things here. But I try to go at this a little bit differently. And even from the perspective of offering some advice at the very beginning of the courtship, because a lot of the time when we're talking about how to expedite a deal, we're really talking about tactics later on in the courtship. And I want to talk about some things, in addition to some things that are going to be later on in the cycle, that we're going to talk about a few ideas that happen really from that moment that you set up an appointment with a potential customer. So that's a long time for me to kind of dick around and tell you what we're going to be talking about. So let's jump in. I have six ideas for you. One of the things, and all of these ideas, by the way, they're not philosophical, they're not theoretical. These are things that not only do I teach my clients, but I use them. So this isn't something that, okay, I read it out of a book and I guess it might work theoretically if I actually sold something. No, I sell every day. I use these every day. So the first thing that I do before they even become interested in talking to me about me doing the training for their company or me doing the coaching for their company is when I'm doing my outbound prospecting, I'm targeting higher probability prospects. That's a bit of a tongue twister. Let me say it again. I'm targeting higher probability prospects. How do you do that? Well, this is kind of a fancy way of me saying that you should use trigger events. So before I get into the definition of a trigger event, I want to just throw a scenario at you. Let's just say, right, I'm kind of taking this out of B2B for a minute. I know pretty much everybody listening to this podcast is selling B2B. So I think sometimes you can really make a point with people if you just have them step outside of what they're doing every single day. Step out of the familiar. We're going to go into unfamiliar territory for a second, but it's just kind of safe, a safe discussion here. I want you to think about, let's just pretend, we're going to play make-believe, that you have this business and you fix flat tires. So here's the duh question of the day. Who do you think would be a higher probability, you know, audience for you? Would it be someone whose tires, all the tires are perfect? Or would it be someone with a flat, right? Wouldn't you think it's would be the person with the flat? So a trigger event, by definition, my definition, by the way, you're not going to find this in any dictionary. It's a trigger event is something that's going on in your prospect, even your client's world, that would lead to a higher probability of them needing your solution. Let me say it again. A trigger event is something that takes place in your client or your prospect's world that would lead to a higher probability of them needing your solution. Remember how I started? The first piece of advice is we want to target higher probability prospects. So going back to the example of the flat tire, we really want to avoid at this point in time, you know, I wouldn't say, maybe avoid is not the right word. I would say prioritize. And ideally, we want to talk to as many people who have the flat or maybe who are about to experience a flat than people who have perfectly good tires and have no need for what you're selling, right? And by the way, when we embrace someone who's experiencing a trigger event, and I have plenty of examples for you that I'm going to share in a moment, it really does expedite the sales cycle. Now, I remember hearing a gentleman by the name of Brian Carroll talking about trigger events. And he said, and I stand by what he said because I've experienced it. He was saying that when we have an opportunity, we're working an opportunity that was generated as a result of a trigger event, there is a 400 to 500% higher probability of that deal closing. I want you to just kind of sit back and digest. Like, God, man, chew that bitch up, man. Just take a moment. I want you to savor that because that's some important stuff there. Opportunities that are generated as a result of a trigger event can close 400 to 500% faster. The reason why is that, again, they're higher probability. There's a higher need and so on. So let me give you some examples of trigger events. Any company out there that is hiring, remember, they're hiring for a reason. It could be because of expansion. It could be because of turnover. If you have something that could directly or indirectly help them with that. Sometimes when people are hiring, there's growing pains. Now, with what I do for a living, sales training, when they're hiring sales reps, guess what? They have to be trained. So I can help them with that. When they hire sales reps, there can be a tremendous loss because they're investing in that sales rep. And in many cases, they have to invest in them for a while before they begin to see a return on that investment. But guess what? Again, I don't just do sales training. I help to, you know, get them to ramp up way quicker and become productive much faster. So hiring could be a reason. You know, a trigger event. Someone who has been promoted. Earnings, the company earnings, both good and bad, by the way. Relocation. Changes in legislation. PR news releases. Now, the thing that I just want to mention, you know, events in general can be a trigger event. Now, right now, that could be a huge thing for you guys to pay attention to, because now that things are opening up in the U.S. and opening up at just a much more rapid pace, you're going to start seeing more corporate events. Now, especially, and again, feel free to say, duh, if you were a person who, you know, dealt in the whole hospitality industry and hotels and catering and things like that, obviously a company that is having an event, that's that in of itself is a trigger event. Also product launches, a new business that launches, online reviews, both good and bad, Yelp, TripAdvisor, Google. There's a lot more, but I'll leave you with the last one. There's over like 30 of these, by the way, that I have. But also a change in strategic direction of a company. That can be a trigger event. And by the way, I'm going to be talking about the sales camp program that we have, the virtual sales camp program, but I actually share over 30 different trigger events and talk about how you can find them and how you can leverage them throughout the entire sales cycle. And if you want to wait to the end of the podcast, that's great. Or just visit yoursalesplaybook.com/salescamp for information. But I share that actually in session 3. So that's number one. First of all, at the very beginning of this whole thing, what you want to be doing is targeting higher probability prospects, right? Right at the beginning of this whole thing, we want to get in front of people who have a higher degree of urgency. When they have a higher degree of urgency, guess what? They're not going to drag their ass. It's going to move a lot faster. So that's number one. Number two, this one you are definitely going to say, what the hell, man? Does this guy think we're in kindergarten here? But just know something. I never need to kill time in my podcast. Seriously. If I'm saying it to you, it must mean that I've noticed that most sales reps will say, duh, that's sales 101, but they never do it, or they're not doing it enough, or I diagnose, you know, what's happening with them, and I realize you never did this. So you ready for it? I kind of beat around the bush on this one. You got to get the right people into the meeting. So that moment when you're setting the appointment, you got to get the right people. So now let me give you my definition of the right people. Now, if you were taught the way I was taught way back when I actually had hair, long time ago we're talking here, I was taught to go for that highest level decision maker. That is a mistake. I'm serious. And it's actually, wait a minute, let me say that a little better than that. It's actually a half-truth. Half-truths are dangerous. Because we kind of hear a part of it and we think that it applies to the entire thought. And it doesn't. It's just kind of half of the thought. It's just like a half truth here going on. So what happens is you definitely need the highest level decision maker. But let me tell you what they're good at. And this is the obvious part, the duh part of the conversation. They're great at signing shit, right? Signing the PO, getting funds for something. They're a great person to have in your corner if there's internal politics getting in the way, speed bumps, things like that. Like I said, signing off on it. If somebody's dragging their ass, they could say, hey, Johnson, right? And immediately, I was thinking of Austin Powers. Johnson? No, I'm sorry. It's just like, I've never advanced beyond the sixth grade level of humor. I'm sorry. It's just like I'm a big kid here. But no, they can get after the person. I'm not going to say Johnson again, even though I just said Johnson like three more times. Yeah, Jones, what's up, man? You're not calling this guy Castain back. We need this. Come on, right? They can go, dude, you're killing me. And they're higher up on the food chain. They get to do things like that. But the problem a lot of the time with these highest level, these C-level people, when they're at the 30,000 foot level, they don't see a lot of the shit that's going on in the trenches. They're removed from the day to day. So you want them as a part of it, but you also need some of the people doing the trench warfare and some of the middle managers and all. So here's an easy way for you to remember it. What I always think about when I'm thinking about getting the right people in the room, I think of three words, and I want you to jot them down, provided you're not driving in the car, because that'd be stupid to do that, right? Like, hello, McFly, I'm knocking on your head right now. Up, down, across, I think of. Up, down, and across. So up, in my case, remember, I sell sales training. Let's just say I'm speaking with a regional sales manager, which happens a lot. I start at that level in many cases. And I'm speaking to a regional sales manager. I'm setting an appointment now. So I'm going to ask for access, and I have a way that I do it, which I'm going to teach you in a second. When I'm asking for access, I'm thinking up, which for them would be a vice president of sales, executive vice president of sales, chief sales officer, chief revenue officer. There's different titles and different levels, right? So that would be up. If I'm going down from a regional sales manager, again, every org chart is different, but typically, from a regional sales manager, it could be basically a sales rep. It could also be a local type of sales manager, maybe for the New York market or the New Jersey market or whatever. So that would be down. Now, if I'm going across and it's a regional sales manager, I would be thinking in terms of other regional sales managers. So there's a phrase that I use to ask for access. And the phrase is, who else besides, and I'm using this, by the way, as I'm setting the appointment with them, right? We're setting it up for, May, whatever, or, actually being that it's June, I don't have a time machine. We're setting it up for June 23rd. I'm going to say the following phrase, which is really a question. Who else besides yourself should join us on the 23rd, the 22nd, or whatever? But I don't stop there, because one thing I learned, and I learned this when I was asking for referrals too, so you could actually use this tactic when you're asking for referrals, is that many times we don't get full access to people, not just because they don't know us or because, they want to be difficult or whatever. It's because they weren't in that mode of thinking. It's almost like if I said to you, okay, I want everybody to think of the color blue, everybody concentrate on the color blue and look around your room of everything, make note of everything that's blue, and then all of a sudden I say, okay, what's brown? You know what I'm saying? You weren't in that mode of thinking. So that's why sometimes they draw a blank and you don't get access or whatever, and then they feel kind of awkward, or they feel, effing stupid because I don't know, right? So you want to help them with that. So you want to give them, you want to use that whole up, down, across model, and you want to say to them, who else besides yourself should join us on the 22nd? Perhaps your vice president of sales, your executive vice president, hey, maybe some of the sales reps, maybe a few of your peers at the regional sales management level. So do you see what I'm doing? I usually go two to three choices, because people can process threes brilliantly. The brain loves threes, by the way. So I kind of start there. Now, the other thing that I just want to say, and this is a key thing, I never stop asking for access. I'm going to repeat that because this might be a little out of your comfort zone. I never stop asking for access. Now, during that phone call, I'll stop. But I mean throughout the entire process. After every meeting, I will always end it with, like, you know, typically I'm setting the next meeting at the end of the existing meeting. Then I'll say, who else besides yourself should join us on the next meeting? And then I'll make, again, additional suggestions based on where we're at. I mean, for example, if they started getting into concerns about budgets or whatever, I might suggest people from accounting. If it's perhaps a matter of, you know, implementation or whatever it is, I might ask for access to other people that could really speak to those areas. Now, there's a reason why I ask after every meeting, and there's a few reasons. The first one is you have to understand something, that if you're doing your job correctly, you're going to have a much deeper level of rapport, credibility, and trust with each and every meeting. So remember, in fairness to you and them and to the deal and everything else, you have to acknowledge that that very first time that you asked for access, you might not have earned the right to full access. So as you go along and you're doing your job correctly, they're starting to trust you. They see the reason for it. The other reason why I ask after every meeting, and I kind of alluded to it before, is because deals change. And they change in complexity and in scope. The logistics may change. That can also change the people that we need seated at the table. So that's the second thing that I do. And I just want to say one other thing. A lot of sales reps don't get access to the right people in the room because they just feel funny asking. I want to tell you, whenever I've asked it in that manner, who else besides yourself? I've never had anybody get uptight or feel that I'm trying to blindside them. So certainly give it a try. The third thing that I do after I set the appointment with them, and on the surface, this is going to seem like advice, like me telling you, don't forget to tie your shoes, or if you have a cough, cover your mouth, you know, like that kind of shit. But this is going to be some serious stuff that we get into, because there's going to be some psychology involved. So here's the basic advice, and then, you know, I'm going to tell you why it's actually deadly. You're obviously going to send a calendar invite after you set up an appointment, but I want you to utilize something that a lot of people forget to do. Utilize the details section of the calendar invite. And what I want you to do is speak in terms of outcomes. Speak in terms of pain points or opportunity points that they express to you. And if you have those scenarios, like you called them up and, you know, they're setting the appointment, and before they set the appointment, they're using certain phrases and all, I want you to use them in the detail section of the calendar invite. Why? Because first of all, psychologically, it's a form of mirroring, which is a form of developing rapport. Most of you guys know it as a body language thing, mirroring. Mirroring can be done actually even more effectively than the body language thing, because pretty much everybody knows that trick. It's like that bullshit move that the Karate Kid does at the end, that freaking crane kick, that, like, you don't know he's going to kick you. Come on, man. So anyway, don't get me started about that kick at the end of the Karate Kid. It was an illegal kick, too. Damn it. I didn't realize that until I started watching Cobra Kai. Freaking Ralph Macchio. I feel like I've been bamboozled for like 35 effing years here. But anyway, getting back to this. Now because I was being a bit of a dick here, I kind of forgot my whole train of thought. See, this happens when you're going to be turning 56 in a few weeks. When you're using their words and phrases, you're mirroring them. And again, people know it. Mostly, okay, if I'm face-to-face and somebody leans back, I lean back. They tilt their head to the side, I do. And guess what? Most people look like a mime. They look like an imbecile, because most people can detect that. But you can mirror lots of things. And people do like people like themselves. And I'm here to tell you that if you're into people watching, I want you to watch two people that, you know, really are having a great conversation. It could be friends, it could be people flirting with each other, it could be husband and wife that probably haven't been married as long as I have, but, you know, like, they're having, no, I'm kidding, but they're having this kind of conversation, they're connecting. Now, what'll happen is, when you're in rapport with someone, you start to assume some of their traits, believe it or not. You start to assume their body language, you start to do, you know, like, some of their phrases and things like that. So it's a form of rapport building. But the other thing too, yes, it also demonstrates that you were listening when you use their words and phrases. But also when you use their words and phrases, and I really want you to pay attention to this last part, because whether or not you're on board on the whole mirroring thing, this should drive the point home for you. When we use someone's exact words or phrases and they're in a highly emotional state, like they're pissed off at their vendor or they're frustrated at the results they've been getting, or even on the positive side, they're very excited about it and desiring a better outcome. Things are going good, but yeah, I want to make it great. Like, I really want to focus on getting my business to the next level. Then what happens is, when you use the word or phrase, it triggers that emotion and it brings them back there. So what this whole crazy thing does that I just outlined for you is that it solidifies the value in keeping the appointment with you, because that can hold up deals, just trying to reschedule, and even people doing a no-show, because it happens. So this is one of the things you can do to reduce no-shows and to reduce the amount of reschedules. The next thing I'm going to go quickly through, because I've probably legitimately talked about this one 50 times. Just on the podcast. But the next thing that you want to do is reverse engineer the decision. And the way that you do it, and I like to do it at the beginning of the meeting because I like to know what I'm dealing with. And it's really a part of the qualification process here, which also smiles heavily on this business of expediting a deal. So what I ask is, and you could preface it any which way you want, but I ask them, I say, hey, listen, not to jump ahead of us, but just ideally, just so I get an idea of your timeline here, ideally, when would you like to see something like this launch? Now, you're going to use the language that you use. For some of you, it would be, ideally, when would you like to see this implemented? My friends in the printing industry, you're not going to say that. You're going to say, ideally, when would you like to see delivery? And then what you're going to do, now you're going to work backwards. So again, let's just say right now, they tell me, ideally, Paul, we would like to see you come in and train, or any trainer, because we don't know if we're going to hire you, in August. So now I'm going to work backwards, and I'm going to subtract out my typical lead time. My typical lead time is 30 days. That's what I usually work on. That's provided I have something in August, and I work backwards. So what I'm going to say is, okay, so let's just say if we're targeting August 12th, I typically need 30 days, and sometimes I'll explain why, but I try to keep it light at this stage, no need for too much information. I typically need about 30 days because there's a lot of steps that we're going to have to go through to make sure that this is perfect for you guys. So if we wanted to get this thing going, say, on August 12th or whatever it is, I would need to have a decision no later than July 12th. Then I stop, and I ask them, is this a reasonable expectation for us to have? Are you able to do everything you need to do internally to make this happen? See, because I want to know early, like within the first few breaths in that meeting, I want to know how committed they are, if they're going to be, you know, just kind of, you know, I don't know, whatever. I mean, I want to know what I'm dealing with. Plus, I want little commitments to lead up to that moment so that they're used to making decisions, so that when I ask them finally, hey, is it a go? Are you comfortable moving ahead? It's really not coming out of left field, because it's just a natural progression at that point. But now, what we've really done now is now we've been able to get that decision closer to the present day, instead of something way off in the future and something non-committal. So I'll do that as well. So again, reverse engineer the decision. The next thing that I do, and it really goes hand in hand with reverse engineering a decision, is Every meeting that I have with someone, I assign homework. And that's just my word for it, right? Assign homework. There's things they need to do, but there's things I need to do. And what I always do is I start by giving myself homework, because no one ever gets pissed at you for giving yourself homework. They don't. And I'll always word it like that. I'll say, well, I'm going to have my homework cut out for me, because I know that you've requested that I do A, B, and C. In addition to that, I'm going to do this. And, you know, I outline what I'm going to do. Then I always say something like, and in fairness, there's a few homework items that I have for you. And then I lay out what they are. But I put, and I should have said this when I was mentioning my things. Most important part of that homework discussion is that you put timelines on it. Because again, just like that reverse engineering a decision, we don't want this shit to be open-ended. We need this to have, you know, like where we tighten the leash. Tightening the leash is so important, because you know what a lot of sales reps end up by doing? They leave so much slack in that damn leash that they end up by jerking the leash. And then all of a sudden now, someone's like, hey, what's going on? Like, why the pressure, right? But if you're gradually tightening that leash, it makes it harder to keep this open-ended, to get jerked around, to have a million excuses. So when we're talking about homework, I put timelines on it. And there's a lot of important reasons why we want to have this homework. And there's some psychology in here too, believe it or not. And, you know, my reasons for the homework is that I really want them to stay engaged between meetings, because I think that's a dangerous part of the sales cycle. You know, like, what are we going to do between, like, see, when I'm in front of you, I don't care if it's live, which will be soon because now the world is opening up again. We're doing a Zoom meeting or a WebEx or a phone call. I'm in front of you in whatever form. You know, unless I'm a complete idiot, it's hard for you not to give me a good percentage of your attention, right? But when that meeting is over, they're thinking about all the other things, all the messages they missed. You know, they begin to forget about us the minute the meeting ends. So what we need to do with the homework, it keeps them engaged. It also keeps us top of mind, like I said, between meetings. It allows them to test drive what it's like to work with you in a no-risk fashion. We're not asking them to sign anything. We're just saying, hey, look, to hit that deadline, I got to do A, B, and C. For me to do A, B, and C, you need to do A, B, and C as well. But I think one of the things about it is that it puts the relationship on a peer-to-peer level, which again is psychology, because so many times we end up in this position where, you know, they're on the higher ground. And, you know, I'm not of the mindset that the customer is king and all that. And you may hate me for saying that. I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. Don't think because I say that I automatically assume, no, they're shit. No, they're not. No. But what I'm here to tell you is that I believe in a peer-to-peer relationship, a relationship of equals, a collaborative relationship. I found in, you know, the 30-plus years that I've been sales, and especially the 10-plus years now that I've owned my sales training company, that collaborative relationships rock. I want you to think about your best relationships that you have with clients. They're not the one-sided relationships. They're the ones where you can work together. There's a synergy. That needs to start way before we're asking them for an order, because believe me, maybe they can't do this consciously, but certainly on a subconscious level, people are going to appreciate the fact that it's easy to work with you, and that when you say you're going to do something, they could take it to the bank. And when they don't do something, that you call them out for it without being a dick, right? That's a big part of it. Now, the last reason why you're doing this whole thing with the homework is that you want an early warning sign. If people aren't doing the things you ask them to do, they're not able to handle simple commitments or whatever, well, then it may be a sign that they're disengaging and you can re-engage them. It also could be a sign, and again, I'm going extreme on you guys. Don't think it means this. It could, right? But giving you the extreme, it could also mean that this might not be a person that's worth spending a lot of time on right now. I don't mean like we write them off for eternity and we put a note in the history books that, you know, your future ancestors and their future ancestors can never do business together. It is now written and done. I don't mean that. I'm just saying that, hey, right now, they're no longer a higher probability prospect, and it, you know, maybe the best use of your time is with people that have a degree of urgency, and then you revisit these other people when they figure out what they want in life. That's all I'm saying. The last one, and I alluded to this before, the last thing for now, remember there's a million other things we should be talking about: questioning skills, rapport building, we can get into negotiation. There's so many parts of this. But I try to focus on some things that I see a lot of people missing out on and not doing and maybe not aware of. But this last one, you really have to create a stay-in-touch cadence. When we talk about cadences, like if I were to ask you right now, almost like word association, when you think of cadence, what do you think of? Prospecting. Well, that's one kind of cadence. How about a keep-in-touch cadence, like a between-meetings type of cadence? Most people fall short, and guess what they do? They do that nonsense, which we've all done. I'm just calling to check in. Call and see if you have a decision. Wanted to see if you needed anything. That's the wrong thing to do. That's how you sound like 10 million other sales reps, and you're not like them. You're listening to this podcast because you want to get better, and you want to be different. You want to differentiate. So this is going to be the way that you're going to do it. You need to have a stay-in-touch cadence. Let me give you some ideas, but really your homework assignment, again, on your own, and then bring it to your sales team, and brainstorm it with them and see what they come up with. But what you want to do is think of different things you could do between meetings. So I meet with a client. One of the things I can do between meetings is send them a recap of my notes. I could send them a thank you. I can send them a LinkedIn invite. I can call or email them with a question. I can send them a resource. I could send them a video highlighting something that they emphasize or maybe that they perked up. You know, they really like got excited when I talked about one of the things in my coaching program or one of the things when I come out and I train a company. There's something else called a potato chip demo that I do. And I believe I talked about this in a podcast, but a potato chip demo is something that you can pre-record. You could do it as a video and send it to them and embed it with a free app like Vidyard, V-I-D-Y-A-R-D. That's a cool free app. You can shoot a quick video. You could also use your conferencing platform, like your web meeting conferencing platform. I use something called AnyMeeting, but a lot of people choose to use WebEx, right? So what you can do is pre-record something, hit the record button, have a few slides, and talk them through a particular, you know, benefit, a particular, you know, particular feature benefit, something that they were excited about that you could talk them through. You could also, now this is something else that could be part of your keep in touch cadence. You ready for this? Teach them something. Based on your interactions with them, you could take them through and say, oh, by the way, here's something that can help you. I just wanted to teach it to you. And you know, you could maybe screenshot something and say, you know, one of the features with our X1000 line is A, B, and C. I just want to show you how easy it is to use it. But the key to a potato chip demo, it's got to be 3 to 5 minutes, right? We're not doing a full-on demo. We don't want it to be War and Peace. People aren't going to give you more than 3 to 5 minutes. You could also do other things too, right? And well, actually, I just want to say one quick thing, and then I want to get into something a little deeper. But you could also play matchmaker and introduce them to someone that could benefit them or buy from them or help them. So, you know, you want to, you know, people always say add value. And you guys who know me, you know, that just drives me effing crazy. Like, what does that even mean? Provide value. Well, things like sending resources to people and teaching them something, introducing them to people, you know, in that matchmaking type of form. See, that is providing value. So that's something you can do. Last but not least, one of the best ways that you can, and this is all part of number 6 here, and we think, well, you snuck in a 7th one. If you want to call it that, hey, free bonus, it'll be a 7th one. But throughout the sales cycle, if you want to expedite the sales cycle, you want to provide forms of evidence. We use evidence to reduce doubt, hesitation, skepticism, objections. Those are the things that slow down a sales cycle and in many cases kill it, right? And leave it for dead. So what are some examples of evidence? Well, testimonials, especially, I would say, and I've been saying this for a while, if you know, you feel that people are still hesitating because of the pandemic. having people that you've helped during the pandemic mentioning specifically you. They have to, a testimonial, by the way, absolutely, all caps, sucks if it just talks about the company and then there's just some generic effing name there. It's not like a real name. It should say their full name, their title, their company name, because it shows that they're legit. Seriously, when you read a testimonial, and say you're reading one about me, Paul is awesome, he kicked ass, he did this, that, whatever. And then you look, all right, I wonder who wrote this about Paul, my Uncle Paul here. I wonder who wrote that. And then you see Jane F., pharmaceutical rep. Yeah, that sounds legit, right? I mean, seriously, it just doesn't sound right. It just reeks of bullshit. So why would you believe that? So you absolutely have to have a legit name on there, full name. But I think the way that you level up on a testimonial right now is that if you have examples of people that you've helped during the pandemic, they should mention it. You know, one of the things Paul did for me during the pandemic is he showed me how to shorten my sales cycle, showed me how to respond to various stalls and delays that are pandemic specific and whatever, blah, 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 blah. Right? So it's just more legit. But testimonials, certainly samples of your work, case studies, facts, reports, those videos that I mentioned earlier, videos in general can be a form of evidence. So let me give you an example. In many cases right now, because things aren't fully open and people are hesitating still, right? They're kind of, I think we're at the phase of this in the US. We're all peeking our head out, make sure it's safe. Okay, and what happens is that before the pandemic, you know, people could come by and get a tour and see that, you know, 5, 10, 15 ton piece of machinery in action. Well, now, you know, they're hesitant. So, you know what you got to do? You got to bring it to them. So a form of evidence can be a video of something like that. So people can see it for themselves, a demonstration, if you will. That could be a huge form of evidence. A tour of your facility can be a huge form of evidence. So there you have it, folks. You have six things that you can do. We said we're going to start with a higher probability prospect by using trigger events. We said we're going to get the right people in the room. My definition of right people is not just the highest level decision maker. And I said think up, like a level or two up from your contact, down the people that report to this person that are, again, really stakeholders. And then finally across, that would be other peers that can utilize or certainly be considered a stakeholder. We talked about how you should be using the calendar invite detail section to solidify the value in meeting with you so that you can reduce cancellations and no-shows, right? Because that can really delay the whole process, could even kill it. We talked about using this concept of reverse engineering a decision where we start with the ideal date they'd like delivery, implementation, the launch, the kickoff. And then we work backwards. We subtract out the lead time we typically need. That gives us the decision date. It's kind of like an equation, right? And we have the decision date. We get their commitment. And the only thing I would add to that I didn't say before, just to keep that leash tight instead of having to jerk the leash later on, which becomes noticed and can piss people off, like much like a dog, right? The dog isn't happy when you jerk the leash. What we can do here also is we could say to them when we're asking for their agreement, and, you know, is this reasonable? You'll be able to give me a decision by July 13th? Yeah, I absolutely can, Paul. Okay, so one of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to send you a calendar invite for that date. We'll have a quick conversation. If it's yes, man, I love the word yes, man. I make my living on the word yes. If it's a no, not as good as a yes, but I got to tell you, I know where I stand with you, but the worst place for you and I ever to be is in the land of maybe or not sure or whatever, because then, like, what do we do? It's a bad dating scenario. Like, do I call? Should I not call? I mean, what do you do? So the next thing we talked about is the concept of homework. I never end a meeting without first assigning homework to myself. Okay, so here, basically action items. Here are my action items. And we never, ever want to have a scenario where we're doing all the work and they're not, going into a collaborative type of peer-to-peer relationship with us. And you'll find when you establish the peer-to-peer collaborative type of vibe with people, it's very different than when we're in a scenario where we're kind of kissing their ass the entire time. Finally, we talked about having, and the importance of having, and I want you to take the ideas I gave you, having a stay in touch cadence, and take those ideas that I shared and come up with additional ones of your own. And then have a sales meeting. Ask your sales manager, hey, can I come into the sales meeting and tell you what this goofy, fat, bald bastard Castain said? He was saying how, you know, we should create a stay-in-touch cadence. Here are some of the ideas Paul shared. Here are some ones I came up with. Let's brainstorm it and see what you have. And this way you can get the collective brain power of the team. I would say don't do it if you have a team of idiots, because then, you know, why bother, right? So I want to let you guys know that we're actually, if you found value in this, we're going to take a much deeper dive into how you could expedite your deals, especially over the summer. We do this in session 4, I believe, of our virtual sales camp program. Also, during this program, I share over 75 tips, 20 plus templates. I've got bonus goodies and PDFs and all kinds of great stuff. And the beautiful thing about it, you can join us from your favorite chair. It's all pre-recorded. Go at your own pace. You don't have to be in the classroom by 11:15 or I'm sending a note home to your parents. None of that on my watch. Now, if you want to learn more, and I hope you do, I'm really hoping that you're at a point here that you understand that it's important to be investing in yourself and learning new things and actually taking it seriously. If you're at the point, I want you to at least check out the program, yoursalesplaybook.com/salescamp. yoursalesplaybook.com/salescamp. With that, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them.